City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
Bust it.
And you are listening to the Windy City Queercast. This is show number 133. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Peter?
I'm good. So we have to give a little happy birthday shout out.
Okay.
To the CD, the compact disc.
Yes.
It's 25 years old. Can you believe it? Can you believe something?
25 years old. I am so old. I am so old. I remember when compact disc came out and I was like, I don't know, because I have all these cassettes.
Right. Well, do you remember when they first came out? They were lovely because the boxes were giant and they had these wonderful, the album cover was huge. It was long. Remember that?
I don't remember. No. Yeah, I kind of remember that.
Do you remember your first CD? What did you buy? What was your first CD?
I don't remember my first CD. It was probably, I think it was Into the Woods. I think I bought a Broadway musical on CD.
Wow.
I think that at the time I started trying to buy Broadway musicals, but I already had so many of them. God, 25 years ago? Is that possible?
It is possible.
Well, I didn't buy any 25 years ago. I probably didn't start buying them until probably 20 years ago.
Yeah, in the 90s was when I...
I don't think I really bought many until the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
I just don't remember buying them. Well, I guess if you were buying them in the mid to late 80s, yeah.
Yeah, in the late 80s. I was early 90s was when I started.
I think I bought Liza at Carnegie Hall as well.
On CD?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I had a few things that I had on CD, but not a lot. I mean, I think I started buying some opera on CD. Mm-hmm. I started buying some things that I thought I really, really, really wanted to keep, but I don't remember my first CD.
One of my very early, early boyfriends.
Yeah.
Took my Ella Fitzgerald American Songbook CDs.
What is wrong with him?
And to this day, I have to tell you folks, I don't know why. Well, I have so many of them, so much of the songs digital. That is still one of the greatest CD compilations out there.
I don't have that one. I have a Billie Holiday and I have a Barbara Streisand that's like 4 or 5 discs.
Oh, the Ella is just, it'll take your breath away. The recordings are so, because the
years.
CDs at that time, the engineers were so dead. It was funny. I was listening to Twit This Week in Tech, and the one guy mentioned the Ella collection. I was like, oh my God, totally. At the time, the engineers were so focused on making CDs such a great experience for you. They checked the levels so flawlessly. They really mastered them so perfectly. So it was just...
Do you remember your first CD?
It was, I think it was Diva by Annie Lennox. I think that was the first one I bought because we didn't get a CD player.
That one, but I don't remember if that's the first one. I don't remember.
We didn't get a CD player for a long time in my house. I remember that. We still had 8-tracks in the car.
We had 8-tracks in our Buick Riviera. That's what we had, an 8-track in that.
I was a cassette and 45 junkie.
Yeah, I had cassettes. And then, well, do you remember Laserdiscs? Because my neighbor
had one.
My neighbor had a Laserdisc. I remember we used to watch Laserdiscs at her house. And she was the first person I knew that had HBO. And I remember that was very big to go over to her house and they'd be showing like Smokey and the Bandit. I think I've mentioned on a podcast that I love Smokey and the Bandit. So we used to watch the Smokey and the Bandits and Porky's and we'd be so excited to watch the really R-rated movies.
Yeah, to see something. And it was on TV. It was coming into the
young.
TV.
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, can you...
I was barely born, actually.
25 years old. 25. And now it's on its way out. I mean, really, CDs are leaving.
What's the new thing?
Well, it's...
Digital.
You know, iPod. You don't need a disc. I mean, Discman. God, I remember my first Discman. It took 6 AA batteries.
Yep.
And they lasted maybe a week because I was listening to music all the time. It was thick. It was heavy. It skipped a lot when you walked around.
Yeah.
But
I had a thing that I would take and you could put the cassette in your car and you could play the disc.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, at the time, I didn't have a car. I was commuting for four, 5, for almost 6 years, every day I was riding the blue line back and forth between my parents' house and either a high school or USC when I was going to college. So yeah, it was, I was real good friends with my disc man.
Yeah. I mean, that's when I listened, you know, I was driving a lot at that time. And that was when I put, and I was also some of my early years when I was doing regional theater and they would house you places. I could just take a little tiny, I had a little tiny Panasonic boombox. It was about the size of a 4-inch square. It was entirely square. It was long and square. Mm-hmm. It looked like a long cube. And, I could put this little cassette in there, and then I could also take my CD player, so I could have both.
Cool, and then have everything plugged up in there.
Yeah, and that would be in my little home away from home, wherever they gave me a house to hang my hat.
Your little music.
So I have to just talk a little bit, because we did this news story in our last podcast that I can't even tell you, you know. Oh, I know what I was going to talk about.
Oh, now she remembers. Yay. The light. I can see the light bulb over
happened.
Your head.
I'm writing it down. But I cannot be more excited. You know, I love cable television these days. I love how great television is on cable.
Yep.
And we did a news story about the fact that Portia de Rossi, Ellen DeGeneres' girlfriend, is going to be coming on for a nine episode arc on Nip Tuck. And she is playing a lesbian, which she is a lesbian.
Season?
It's a lot of
13 is the season?
I think so. Yeah. Probably. Wow. I've got all the disc sets. Some of them haven't even opened. But I love the Nip Tuck so much. And so Portia's coming on playing a lesbian. So she hasn't done any really homoerotic action in a while since Sirens.
Sirens.
When Elle McPherson was bodaciously gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love her in that film. But anyhow. And she's going to be getting it on with Julie Richardson, who I love. I love Julie Richardson's energy. I think she's very sexy, like her mother, Vanessa Redgrave. And they're going to have a lot of pretty sex.
Yeah.
It's going to be blonde, long-haired, pretty.
It's going to be boobies. I wonder if she'll show her boobies.
They don't show too many boobies on Nip Tuck in a sexual way. Well, some they do, but they show a lot of body.
Yeah.
You know, they show
curves
a lot of, they show
hip
a lot.
And
they're showing a lot on this. I'm also watching on TNT, you know, this Holly Hunter show. And I swear to God, she has so much sex on this show. And she's so wiry and so thin. And she looks, it looks like last week that we saw her bush. Like she's straddling a guy. She has nothing hardly, she's nothing on. She's wearing like a pink bra. And she has like a, she's like a waist, like a piece of weight, like a, what would you call those? Like a waist or hip necklace? I don't know. It's like a chain
like
that
a
goes
thong,
around.
Is it?
It's like a chain that goes around your waist, but she didn't have any.
A small belt maybe?
It kind of is. It's like a small belt. Like a small belt. Might have been. But I was like, I was freezing and I said, is that her bush? Am I seeing like her pubes?
You know,
I don't know. They can do anything on these television shows now that are not ABC, NBC, and not Showtime or HBO.
Every time I see Holly Hunter, I just remember her holding the baby from Raising Arizona. Ha, I love this baby so much.
I need me a taller. They got more than they can handle.
Ha, you are going to get back in there and get me that baby.
Get me that baby. I need that baby. I need me a toddler.
That's one of my favorite.
When he says, I'll be taking these huggies and any spare change you might have in the register. Okay, son, you got a panty on your head. My first Mac, my first little cube Mac Classic that was this tiny, awful looking gray square when you look back at it. I had, somebody gave me, I could have it say, I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way. That tells you how long ago.
Jessica Rabbit.
This was very cutting edge, very cutting edge. When I did something, like I don't even remember now, because now my computer doesn't talk to me like that. But if I had a mistake or when I turn on the computer, when I turned on the computer, and so it did used to say, son, you got a panty on your head. It could say that. My Mac Classic could say that.
That's
from
brilliant.
Raising Arizona. So, but I, you know, Peter, you and I have kind of, we lovingly guide each other to new television.
Absolutely.
I lovingly guided you to The Weeds, which you missed, and then you watched online and
picked it all back
you
up.
You lovingly guided me to The Big Love. I don't know what else
and the Rick and Steve
you told me about. I feel like I've told you about something else, but I can't remember. But anyhow, I've told you about the So You Think You Can Dance. You won't watch it, but I have a new show. I'm up to watching 5 episodes. This may mean you need to download or come over to my house and I'll hold them because Kelly's not watched them yet and they're stored in my TiVo. I am addicted to a new show on AMC. Is it AMC? No.
The American Movie Channel.
Yeah, I think it is on AMC.
They have an original series?
Yes, it's called Mad Men. like admin, and it is guys from the late 1950s, early 1960s, who are in the advertising world.
It's there like 50s period advertising.
It's 50s period, but it's hot. Real stories. It shows how they are confined by the structures of life. There's the main guy, I don't even know his name because it's too new. I'm just kind of absorbing it right now. But the costumes are fabulous. The woman who actually did the costumes is from my tiny hometown in Tennessee, which is why I started watching this. She won the Emmy for Deadwood. She did Deadwood.
50s and 60s, pointy boobies.
Oh, pointy boobies, good big red hoop lipstick, skirts, really guys good with hair. The beautiful suits and the gelled back hair and the tiny little pocket, you know, thin pocket handkerchiefs in it. But I have to tell you, after even episode one, like, the way episode one plays, it doesn't play like we're starting off a show and we need to introduce you every character. It just starts, and they all work in this ad firm. And I think being just in advertising, which I am too, one of my clients mentioned, you know, you should be watching this. And I was like, oh yeah, I was going to watch that because Janie's doing the costumes for it. And I got an email from a bunch of people in my hometown, and it is the first episode when it ended, like the last nanosecond, my jaw dropped. And I have that experience in almost every episode.
Really?
There is something so you don't expect. You keep expecting it just, they keep revealing the layers underneath the facades. And
sounds very 6 feet under to me.
It is. It's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of got a feel of 6 feet under. It's got, you know, it's got the overtone, kind of like Far From Heaven, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it has a very stylized flavor to it with the costumes and the set and the music.
I love that period of time so much.
But it is so good. So if you're not watching it, you know, try. I don't know if you can download it from television.
Oh, honey, I can call, make a phone call. Don't worry.
It is really Mad Men Mad Men.
When did it start? Did it start recently?
It started about 5 weeks ago.
Oh, then they'll repeat them all. They'll do a big.
So they totally will. And it's just, the main guy is so charismatic. I don't know him from anything. That's the thing. I don't know any of these actors really much from anything.
That way. The Sopranos season one, nobody was nobody. And look at what that turned into.
It has a feel like the Sopranos, not in that roughness, but just like you do not know where this story is going. And it is truly slicing. Like you see every epidermal layer of this, if they slice this time and this office and this person's life, like you see the facades and you see the reality. And it's just, it's intriguing. It's engaging. It's beautiful to look at. It's so smartly written. So it's my recommend of the week, folks, is Mad Men.
Well, I actually have one too. Okay. I have one too, and it's not one kind of program, and it's not one style of program, but I have become infatuated with, on Logo, it's called Real Momentum.
Oh, yeah.
And it has so many different flavors, and it has so many different
documentary
things. It tends to be, GLBT documentaries about what's going on, but there have been just so many poignant ones, and maybe the subject matter is not gay, but it's done by gay filmmakers.
Yeah.
But there are just, it's really powerful stuff. I'm feeling like it's an image union, sort of, for gay people. Are you familiar with Image Union or Independent Lens? Independent Lens and Image Union are two, they are very near the top of my record list in the DVR. They are two documentary showcases on PBS.
Ah, gotcha.
So,
Angle or...
Same exact thing.
Yeah, gotcha.
They all actually started, almost all of them started because of Image Union. Image Union was one of the first television programs. I think it's celebrating its 25-year history now.
It's
as old as the CD. They started putting documentary films on television, on public broadcasting. So Real Momentum, it's just wonderful. Look in your TV guide for that one because it's one you don't want to miss. There's so many good stories. And they've been repeating a lot lately, which is good, so you can catch whatever you want that's in there. Did you see, though, the TiVo news?
No. Well, they've got a new player.
Yeah, it's like your player, but it only costs $300.
Yeah, but it has a lot less features than mine does, and it has less hours.
Just space.
It has less hours.
But I think I might get that one.
You should. I love the TiVo.
I think I might get that one.
You'll love it.
I was looking at it. But you know, I'm going to be taking the guitar lesson, so I got to focus on playing my git fiddle.
Your git fiddle.
My git fiddle.
Hey, folks, I want to invite everyone, if you live in the Chicago area or close to the Chicago area, to come out on Monday, August 27th. So if you're listening to the show as an archive, you missed it.
But
hopefully you automatically download our shows and you'll hear this. I am hosting an event called Flip Flop. It's a flip flop, a musical swap, a gender bent night of musical theater and show tunes at Sidetrack with some of Chicago's best and brightest talents in the musical world. We have amazing cabaret artists from Amy Armstrong and Freddie Allen to Tom Michael and Becky Minzy, Honey West, Steven Rader, amazing musical theater artists like multi Jeff Award winning Kate Fry, mm-hmm. Matt Amador, George Keating, in addition to cast members of the Putnam County Spelling Bee, The Color Purple, and Wicked, all performing numbers. The men are singing women's show tune songs and the vice versa. The women are singing the men's. And it's all to raise money for the About Face Youth Theater, which works with ages 14 through 21, GLBT and questioning youth to tell their stories in a theatrical setting. And it's really powerful. It's only $30, folks, and that gets you two drink tickets. And so you can come in, you can have a couple of nice drinks and, but what you should know is that absolutely every dollar of this benefit is going to the youth theater. We have no expenses. Everything has been donated. So if you come and you bring your friends, every dollar will go directly to the services and to the kids and to the youth program. Unlike, you know, a lot of benefits where they the printing of the tickets and the printing of the posters and the printing of this and the talent, blah, 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 yeah. Everything is donated. And I want to thank our sponsors for that. Grey Goose, Supergirl Images, Windy City Media Group, and also Sidetrack. Mm-hmm. So please come out. The doors, you want to be there by 6 o'clock. That's the start. That's a loose start because it's, you know, show tune queens. But it's going to be a show tune night. There are going to be some sing-alongs. It's going to be so, so, so much fun. So come out. There's more information at aboutfacetheater.com, but it's Monday, August 27th, 6 o'clock. You have to be there. Be in by then. At Sidetrack and come out and support the About Face Youth Theater and hear some amazing. I don't think ever in Chicago have this 20 some odd people ever been performing together. So it's going to be really, really, really amazing. So, and on our show today, the show that Peter turned me on to.
Speaking of logo.
Yeah. The happiest couple in all the world. happiest
Rick
gay
and
couple.
Steve,
Rick and Steve. And Rick and Steve, creator, writer, director, Alan Braca is here with us. And we're very excited as Rick and Steve goes on to DVD mm-hmm. in its first season. Way to play catch up, as we were just saying. If you've missed any of them, you can just buy the DVD.
Bam, you got them.
There you are. And it's got lots of fun things to talk about because Alan also, you may know him as the man behind Eating Out and Eating Out 2. Mm-hmm. And so stay tuned. We've got that. We've got news. We've got Jerry. We've got all kinds of things after this.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked, Chicago's newest smash hit musical and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular. I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy Award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked, at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of us, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced. Hoping, knowing, someday, you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt, and you're still a crowd pleaser.
Oh!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
In Oregon, conservative organizations trying to repeal the state's domestic partnership and civil rights statutes are reportedly having trouble collecting enough signatures to have their issues put on the ballot. Both pro-gay measures, the Family Fairness Act and the Oregon Equality Act, are scheduled to take effect January 1st, 2008.
Baltimore, Maryland resident Kevin Douglas Olive has prevailed in a legal battle to keep his late partner's remains in a Tennessee gravesite the couple selected. The parents of the 26-year-old Russell Goff unsuccessfully argued that their son didn't know what he was doing. Goff passed away in 2004 of a staph infection.
In Suffolk, Virginia, Francis Renee White was arrested for injecting silicone into transgender patients at his home and not having a medical license. Two former clients of White have said that they let him inject the materials into their face or breast area. It is not known if they suffered any complications.
In New York City, Department of Corrections official Mark Carpentier was arrested at a gay bar called The View and charged with assault, criminal mischief, and resisting arrest following a brawl there. Carpentier has been suspended indefinitely from his $140,000 a year position.
In England, the Archdiocese of Liverpool threatened to fire Charles Coyne after it discovered that the primary school principal was gay and was in a civil partnership. But it cannot fire him. It turns out that the country's Equality Act outranks the archdiocese. The measure, which went into effect in May, includes church-based schools.
Checkmate. In San Francisco, some entrepreneurs in the Castro plan to stay open on Halloween despite the city's pleas to shut down their businesses that night. Recently, city officials canceled the annual Halloween party in the neighborhood after 9 people were injured by gunfire last year.
Former escort Mike Jones, who outed anti-gay evangelical leader Reverend Ted Haggard in his book, I Had to Say Something, The Art of Ted Haggard's Fall, said that the straight community in his hometown of Denver has been far more supportive than the gay community, who he said has yelled at him and even spat on him. He also said that when he was an escort, 80% of his clientele consisted of married men, while 15% were members of the clergy.
In Vancouver, a court ruled that Reza Chowdhury had no claim to a home he reportedly lived in with Peter Argenti. Although the panel ruled that Argenti and Chowdhury, a Bangladesh refugee, had a 14-year same-sex relationship that Argenti kept secret, the court felt that there was not enough evidence to show that Chowdhury deserved the house.
In Uganda, gay rights activists pleaded for equality, but a government official labeled homosexuality repulsive. Victor Mukasa of the group Sexual Minorities Uganda has said that he'd like to see a conversation started so that people will stop equating gays with pedophiles and rapists. However, government spokesman Karunda Kavingia said that homosexuality is repugnant to the people of Uganda.
Daytime television aired its first teenage same-sex kiss on August 17th when As the World Turns showed characters Luke, played by Van Hansis, and Noah, Jake Silberman, engaged in a lip lock. Silberman said, quote, "It's a real story. It's an everyday story. It's one that millions of people are going through."
Just like Peter did when he was in high school. And Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, makes its way around the country next year. Based on the 1987 film with Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey, the musical will premiere at Chicago's Cadillac Palace Theater on September 2nd, 2008. The show is currently playing to sold-out houses in Europe.
No, I had it. Ugh, I could keep going, but I won't.
Nobody put this baby in the corner. And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Oh, this is Judy Tenuta, your love goddess! Attention, love slaves of Chicago! I love listening to the Windy City Queercast. It makes me release my eggs! It can happen.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. They are the happiest gay couple in all the world. Well, of course, I am talking about Rick and Steve of the hilarious hit logo adult cartoon Rick and Steve. West Lahunga Beach takes us into the world of Rick and Steve and their wacky, wacky friends, Kristen, Rick's lifelong lesbian friend and her wife, Dana, and the bitter queen, Chuck, whose partner, Evan, is 19 years old and a club kid. Cue Alan Braca. Alan is the creator, writer, and director of Rick and Steve, and he joins us as this new DVD of season one is already being released. We can't believe it, because Peter and I have just become addicted to your show in the past couple of months. Mm-hmm. So welcome to the show, Alan. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you.
It's happening so quickly.
It is happening quickly. I just said to Peter the other day, I said, is there a season I haven't seen? He was like, no.
It just came out.
So we're all in it. And I just got my crisp new little DVD in the mail today. So
nice. It's
very,
oh, wow.
very exciting.
Well,
you need a podcast. I've seen your blog and I already told Peter that he has to check out that you're with Ariana Darling, who I love so much.
My Greek sister. I love her.
We love her so much. But let's start with Rick and Steve. Where did the idea for the show originate for you?
It started in film school. My first assignment in my first year was to make a short video about relationships. And I just moved here and I didn't know anyone. I didn't have any friends. So I made the first episode of Rick and Steve all out of Legos. It was an 8-minute short about a gay couple and lesbian couple and this sperm interaction. And that was in 1999, and I wrote episode one on it, kind of imagining that if people seeing this would think it was part of a series. And then it just kind of took off. Out of school, it went to Sundance and played at 200 film festivals, got picked up by Spike and Mike. Lego found out and sued me, but the premise was there. So after that, people started asking for more episodes, and I started pitching it around and trying to turn it into a TV show.
Well, and it's obvious. I mean, because Peter turned me on
right away.
You
I had
all.
It in my calendar the debut. I'll have you know when it came out on Logo, it was in my calendar. My phone was ringing, telling me make sure you set the DVR tonight.
Yeah, we talk about our TiVo, our DVRs, and quite a bit on the podcast. And you know, Peter said, you know, Amy, you have to watch it. It's like the gay South Park. It's so fabulous. And do you feel quite influenced from those early days in 1999 by how far a show like South Park has actually taken adult TV cartoon comedy?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really appreciative of it. You know, we do get that comparison a lot. And when I had first made it, I hadn't seen much South Park.
Mm-hmm.
And where South Park was in 99 was still fairly conservative. I mean, it was out there, but compared to what they do now, someone shoving Paris Hilton in their ass.
Right.
Yeah.
But even now with standards and practices, I report to the exact same people that South Park does because it's all the Viacom family. And I can't get away with what they get on that show. They said to really kind of look at season one for what they got away with there because I'm just starting out. So, you know, I aspire to do more, but my focus is different than South Park too. I don't have a lot of gross-out moments. There are a few things, but they're always kind of grounded in reality.
Right.
When it comes to the gross-out parts.
Yeah, turkey basters and such things, you know.
Sperm and, and food.
Glasses of milk and...
Right. And cats attacking pregnant women. That's my favorite. All the cats. So, but you have really... I mean, our community, our GLBT community sometimes is just so...
It's so over the top.
Well, but we're also so stodgy about our political correctness. Mm. And you have some things on the show that are, people would say, are not very politically correct. I mean, your HIV character is in a wheelchair and has been in a relationship for 4 years with a 19-year-old. So do the math.
Armloads of fun drugs and speeds and good stuff.
Do you think that have you worried about the political correctness and pushing those envelopes with your storylines?
I don't. I'm actually very cautious when I do make jokes that may be considered offensive. I don't want to make jokes where I'm just making fun of people who are already made fun of from point of view of someone who doesn't understand. I always want to make humor from the situation, from the point of view of someone who's there. So I don't make an AIDS joke and at the expense of people with AIDS. I make a joke for people living with AIDS.
Right.
A kind of humor that they would understand, that maybe other people would feel kind of left out on. So so I am pretty careful about that, but still it manages to offend lots and lots of people.
But you're an equal opportunity offender because you have a gay couple and a lesbian couple on every episode. So that's really good.
Everybody falling into their place.
We like that. And the fag hag and all of that good stuff. What are just the technical elements of how this show is created? You said that you made the original one in 1999 with Legos. You got into problems and whatever. But they still have obviously the essence of a Lego.
Lego-esque. The geek in me wants to know how you do it.
How do you do it?
Spill.
Well, we build these little, they're 10 and a half inch dolls, and they're molded out of plastic, and we shoot them one frame at a time. So I'll have an animator and a stage in a room and a couple of puppets and a set, and the animator does an average of about 8 seconds of animation a day. So it takes a while to get a full episode done. We would have 16 animators working for 7 months to do the first season, for example. And it's all done up at Cup of Coffee Studios, this great place in Toronto that has Celebrity Deathmatch in the other half.
Right.
Studio. My God. After work,
It seems appropriate, right?
After work, you guys must just party like there's no tomorrow. That must be amazing.
But speaking of celebrities, you have some really amazing voices on the show. Who all have you had as contributing voices for people who may not have caught the show yet? And if you haven't, you have to go to happiestgaycouple.com or logoonline.com and you know, putting Rick and Steve. It's just something you need to be watching. But who are some of the people that you've had voicing the show?
Peter Page from Queer as Folk plays Steve. Wilson Cruz plays Evan, the twinkie Latino boy. Alan Cumming plays Chuck, the prosody guy in the wheelchair. Margaret Cho is Condi Ling, the suicidal fag hag who lives across the street. Yeah. And then we've had some great guests come in. Lorna Luft plays Steve's mom, and Lorraine Newman plays like a variety of lesbians.
Lorraine Newman. It's so good that you found use for Lorraine Newman and Legos. I just love Lorraine Newman so much.
Yeah,
that's great. Now, did Lorna give you any good stories on the set in the recording studio? Come on, every gay man wants to know if there's a Liza Lorna story.
Because the recording sessions are only 4 hours. We're only allowed to have 4 hours, and we have to get everything out.
Wow.
So, It's really tough and tight, and it's really just kind of a little bit of introduction, a little chatting, and then all work.
Aww. You got to work in some play this
year.
You
got to have a cast party somehow.
So you spoke about that you use these 10.5-inch puppets, and it's really appropriate that the people from Avenue Q, who have kind of also made naughty puppets, have really provided the music and the sound for you on Rick and Steve. How did that collaboration happen?
Well, my first Broadway musical was actually Avenue Q. I was there in New York having meetings on Rick and Steve, and I saw it with my executive producer, our co-executive producer, and we afterwards we were talking about the music, and I was like, yeah, I want something like that as our theme song. That'd be awesome. And he said, well, why don't I ask them? So we called them up and we met with them, and they loved the idea, and they came on board.
Look at that.
That's amazing.
People should just ask. Is that what you're saying?
Just do it.
That's all we had to do, you know, and all I had was this 8-minute Lego piece. I had to show anyone. And they just liked the humor. So
season one is coming on DVD. It's right around the corner. It's just about to happen. But I'm kind of a DVD addict because, I've seen the show, whatever. But I want to know if there's extras. Is there behind-the-scenes stuff? Come on, can you give us some of that? Is there any goodies in there?
Yeah, there's all kinds of extras. There's a whole bunch of these short episodes. We made like these 2-minute digisodes that are on the internet that you can now see them on your television screen. So there's 12 of those. There's a whole bunch of interviews. There's a behind-the-scenes documentary where it kind of answers all of your questions about how this is made and where it came from. And you can meet a lot of the crazy but lovable animators who sit in the room all day moving puppets, you know, a millimeter at a time. There's a lot of fun on there.
In addition to this, I mean, this is your month of DVD. People may also know you as the writer and director of Eating Out and Eating Out 2, Sloppy Seconds, and also
Boy Culture.
Your work with Boy Culture, which has also come out this month. you know, do you like producing, writing, directing when it's real people as opposed to Legos? Or sometimes is it just good to be able to move a 10 and a half inch figure around and make it do exactly what you want it to do?
Well, it's all telling people what to do, so it's all complicated, but just in different ways. Working with an actual actor, the bright side is you have one actor who does one performance, and you can tweak it all you want there with that actor. Working with with a puppet, I have an actor who is in this recording booth trying to give this emotion that has no idea what this puppet's going to be doing or the face is going to look like or how it's going to move. And then I've got 16 different animators all animating a different part of the performance of this character.
Yeah.
Trying to match the voice. So it's very complicated, but it's different.
Now, did you ever expect the success that Eating Out had, which was your first feature? I mean, it was shot for... I mean, what isn't even really a budget in the film world today?
Yeah, we thought in 10 days. I had no idea. We thought it would make a little bit of money back, and if we'd go straight to DVD, and we'd have like something on our resume. I finally made a feature, and I could now go make something more serious. I had no idea that it would do this or even lead to a sequel, you know.
Yeah.
And we're actually making a third one now. So,
are you? You know,
Yeah.
I think we may have tipped people off because I remember we had Jim Ferraros on our show right after he had just come in from finished filming. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about the benefits of the flat iron. I remember us talking about him flat ironing his hair. He was like, yeah, I just made this movie and it took me 10 days. That was all we had. It was insane. It was so amazing. And because Jim's been a friend of our show
and he was just on the show recently as well.
Yeah, it's very fun. So we've obviously been a big promoter of your work because we've promoted both the Eating Out films and now we're just Boy Culture as well. So
I saw it twice because I just had to because that boy was oof.
He gave you some culture.
Actually, all of them, pretty much. Let's just put that out there. They were all delightful. The second time, I was really sort of starry-eyed, and I had to go to that one alone. So,
now you obviously are a funny guy. You have a funny perspective of our community as the GLBT community. Do you like keeping the focus on the queer community? Do you see yourself branching out into, mainstream or straight world? Do you have a perspective on that you think is funny? Yeah.
The question is, can I write straight characters? I can. But what I'm doing right now is all of this really independent, low-budget stuff. And when you're not getting paid anything, you have to put hours and hours of work into it. It's so much easier when you're writing about something that you love.
Yeah.
So until I start getting your paychecks, I'm going to be writing about gay people because it's what I love to do.
Well, and you're getting to do that now in the Advocate with your new column, Hell in a Handbasket, which is... sounds very Southern. That's something my mother would say. what is that column going to be about for you?
Well, actually, I've been writing that for a few years.
It
just comes off and on. I think it's been 3 or 4 years now. The term comes from what someone at church told me where I was going after I told them I was gay. So I love that phrase.
Yeah, my grandmother says hell in a paper sack. And somehow that...
Call about my observations of life and adventures I have.
Yeah. No, it's really great. It's wonderful to have your perspective out there and to have people who poke fun at our community and hold up the mirror to some of the absurdity and the quirkiness of our community and the absurdity of the stereotypes and why they're stereotypes because they exist. I love it.
Pointing them out and pointing them out for everybody else to see. I think that's the amazing artifact of what's going on and what people are seeing.
Yeah, I think people freaking out on both ends. Some people are saying, you got these stereotypes and they're terrible and you're going to destroy the gay community by showing us what we're like. And then I got the other end saying, this is nothing. This is so tame. You get nothing compared to South Park.
Yeah, exactly.
I figure if I get it on both ends, I'm kind of right where I need to be.
You're right on the beam. Hey, just off the subject, I was exploring your blog today, and you were one of the lucky people that got to witness history in person. You were at the big HRC logo presidential debate, and the funny thing was, my partner and I sat on our couch, and I didn't know what you looked like, so I wouldn't know to point you out until today. After you should go to his blog; it's very interesting. But we kept saying, you know, between that woman, the Asian woman, like over the shoulder, and you were right behind her, that you two got more, you got as much airtime as every one of the candidates because you were over their left shoulder the entire debate. So that's who you are, yeah, in case people want a visual.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been. But tell us about your...
I was reacting so much more. I was like, oh, that would have been so great. Because she kind of kept this kind of plain face throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, she was pretty poker face throughout the whole thing.
It was pissing me off. And I was so close to hissing Hillary. I didn't want to get thrown out.
So this is what I want to know. Yay. What were your thoughts on it? You wanted to hiss Hillary? When did you want to hiss Hillary?
When she said it was a personal decision that she's against gay marriage. Because what was so disappointing about that is she's had more exposure to gay people than most gay people have. She knows our problems. And if she still made the personal decision that we're not worthy, that's horrible.
I mean, do you think it's because she knows she won't get elected if she says it?
I've been told that, but I think that's not a reason for me to vote for her. If the best case scenario is that she's lying, then that's not very exciting to me.
Right. Right.
So, but no, I don't think so. I don't think that she's just lying. I don't know what she feels, but that's what she's telling me in a gay and a gay audience in the gayest situation you could have.
Right.
Yeah, so. She'd have to be at the bathhouse for it to get any more gayer than that or something.
Or home with her assistant. One or the other. I don't know.
She doesn't even want to repeal DOMA, just part of it. That was like really disturbing. I didn't realize she was that conservative.
Hmm.
So what did you think of the night? Was it really palpable that people, you know, almost booed or there was a groan or something with Richardson when he kind of self-combusted on the fact that...
Because it really did feel like a mistake.
Yeah.
Even Melissa rephrased it. She's like, let me ask you this again. Because it's like, when she first asked the question, I thought, oh, what a throwaway question. Of course you're going to say you're born that way. What a stupid question.
Right, because he basically said he...
I was shocked.
He said that he believed that homosexuality was a choice, and she thought that was... And I heard from some people...
Well, I'm not a scientist. It's
like, right.
You don't need to be a scientist to know if you chose to be straight.
Do you feel like the people that really warmed the room were the two people that said exactly Kucinich. What people wanted to hear, or just Kucinich? Took to make people be
Kucinich
warm to him?
Just say what we wanted to hear. Kucinich said it well, and he meant it. He just went off and said all of the things that we feel, and he was feeling it. He really lit up the room. But the second he walked off, you know, all of the people started saying, "Oh, too bad he can't be elected."
Yeah.
So you know, it was nice to have the hope that he brought. But then all the negativity came immediately afterwards. Like he. And it's sad. It's kind of self-defeating. It's like we don't deserve that. Our country doesn't deserve that. Because he's not just that way on gay issues. He's that way on pretty much every issue, every political issue. He stands where I stand.
Right. What did you think about Barack Obama? Many people have not been able yet to be in a room with him, probably because of Hillary's activism and some of these other people. They've you know, been around a little longer. Maybe people have had an opportunity to be in a room with them. What were your feelings on him, and what did you hear people saying about Barack?
Very, very, he was taller than I thought he was. He was very charismatic. Mm-hmm. You really wanted to listen to what he was going to say. He just kind of has a way of drawing you in with anything. Where his point of view is fairly similar to Hillary. It's a little bit further left, so I appreciate that. I liked him. I wish he didn't have that whole comment about semantics not being an issue, because it clearly is. But I think he was a lot further in line with my personal views than Hillary was.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You're the first person we've gotten to talk to was actually in the room and right behind the shoulder. So just go look at any coverage. Mm. That's Alan Brocker right behind
yeah,
all of them.
Just got to look at the backs of their heads, not the entire time.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I know, you sat down and were like, oh, shit,
well,
I can't see
the face. The only two candidates turned around and addressed the people behind them during the whole thing, and that was Kucinich and Clinton.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, take in the room. They're both those kind of candidates.
You need to do it like a Sting concert on the rotating platform.
That's true. That's true. Well, everyone, the complete season one DVD of Rick and Steve is out as of August 28th. Boy Culture just came out. Mm-hmm. You want to visit logoonline.com for more, or if you want to just catch up on anything about this show, if this show is piquing your interest or just this interview is piquing your interest, go to happiestgaycouple.com. There's much lively mm-hmm. banter and discussion and
set your DVRs and your TiVos and everything to suck it all up, because season one is coming out doesn't mean you've seen them all.
That's right. And so, get the DVD because it's got all these extras.
All these extra bits and pieces.
We want a season two, so the better season one does, the better the chances are for getting another season.
Oh, well, we're barking pretty loud. We want there to be a season two. It's got to happen. Alan Baraka, thank you so much for being on with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now. I know it's cloudy, but
the best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.